This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to another edition of the Sellers Points podcast right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. I am, of course, your host, Russell Sellers, and with me, as always, my favorite ginger bear and yours, it's Mr. Kelly Poole. How you doing, Kelly?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing better. Some folks, our loyal listeners, I'm assuming it's plural, our loyal listeners will have no doubt noticed that we've been a little off schedule. Didn't have a second episode in August. And they're like, well, what the hell happened? Well, that's my fault to a pretty strong degree. I had some issues with my jaw that had to play out and had to go through the healing process. It wasn't fun. Still not 100%, but I am better. So I thought we should definitely get one of these episodes in before people start saying, oh no, is the show over? Like, no, the show is not over. And unfortunately, what we planned to do was a look ahead at potential for Spider-Man Homecoming sequel. Well, we're not going to do that exactly. Instead, Kelly and I kind of realized that we haven't just talked shop for a little while. We haven't just talked about the comics that we are reading that kind of gave birth to the show in the first place. So we thought we'd just go over a few of the books that we've been enjoying the past month or so, and any particular issues that we wanted to call out for these books, and maybe talk a little comics, TV, and movies in the second half. And maybe we'll get some Spider-Man Homecoming sequel chat in there too. But without further ado, why don't we just get right to it and start talking about the books that we've been reading lately. And Kelly, why don't you, what have you been reading? Like, what's a good book that people should be going out of their way to pick up and put on their pull list right now?
I think, like, for me, one that I've really been enjoying, and it's really nice to be able to enjoy it because it's been such a long time since I was able to really enjoy this book, and that's the Teen Titans. Back with the New 52, you know, they did launch, I think, it, you know, the Teen Titans, but it really was a mess. It really just didn't – it never – at least for me, I never felt like I really gelled with the book. But this version, and I really love the fact that Damian's kind of calling the shots and he's being Damian, and that's okay, you know, and Starfire, I mean, she's kind of the surrogate, kind of, you know, almost you're like a den mother, you know, watching over the kids.
She really is.
You know, it's like, you know, and it's just a really good, just a good book. And I mean, the characters are good. This whole arc, they just finished up with Aqualad and and I'm really glad that he's becoming one of my favorite characters in the book, because they've just done a lot of character building with him. So I'm, you know, it's just a really good book. I think having a teen book, see, DC has a really good job, or has done a really good job at bringing, at least this book. This has been a book in their, you know, history that has always kind of had a strong following, but I think they've really brought it back to what the Teen Titans are about, as opposed to the New 52 version that really, they tried some things but just didn't, just wasn't the Teen Titans.
Yeah, they tried a couple of times the course of the New 52 to get a Teen Titans book to really take off, and neither creative team just could get it. But I love what Ben Percy has been doing on the book. So I'm right there with you. I'm really enjoying it as well. The way he writes Damian is pretty spot on. The stuff that he's done with Aqualad recently, especially the last two issues, I would say, has been really strong. And I was not real high on Aqualad to begin with, because I had this notion of Aqualad from Young Justice in my head, and this is not that Aqualad. He's the same character. Right. He will be Calderam, I'm sure, but I didn't see any flashes of that in this run. He felt like a very different kind of character, but in these last couple of issues, I've started to see some of that Calder that I recognize coming through. And on top of that, we've gotten teases that Emiko Queen is about to join up with the Titans, and that Damian is going to develop his first crush. So that is right in my wheelhouse. I am all about that. And of course, Ben Percy is also writing Green Arrow, so he's writing Emiko Queen very regularly. That is a character that he is intimately familiar with. So I am very excited about the direction of Teen Titans right now. I'm right there with you. Good book. So if you're not reading Teen Titans, folks, you need to be reading Teen Titans. It's good stuff right now. Put it and Titans as the two major team books that you absolutely should be reading from DC. One that excited me actually this past week, because we had a fifth Wednesday in August, and Image has brought back their magazine. I guess it's going to be a quarterly. I'm not exactly sure how this is running, but it's their Image Plus magazine. And in it, it gives you previews of a lot of the stuff they've got coming up. A look back at some of their more popular stuff, interviews, previews of new comics that are about to come out. But in this month's issue, they have finally a new Witches story from Scott Snyder and Jock. It's called Witches Bad Egg, and it's an 8-page little mini story that ties into the main Witches arc. Now, folks, if you read Witches from almost 2 years ago now, it's been a little while since we've had anything from this story. But those six issues were tremendous. Some of the best horror writing that Scott Snyder has ever done. And Jock's art is just, it's always good. It's always on point. It really plays off of the horror elements, and the way he plays with colors too is a unique thing within this particular story. But I like how this story is supposed to bridge the gap between the end of the first arc and the beginning of a new volume of Witches, which we don't actually have a release date for yet. But since this is a connecting story of that within Image Plus, that's where it's going to be appearing. I got to highly recommend that you go get this. And you may find some new stuff in here that you'll fall in love with. You may read a preview of a new comic that's coming up and be like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I think I might want to check that out. Also, a pretty good Image at 25 retrospective from Robert Kirkman is in here. So that's something that's definitely worth checking out. I think more folks should be aware of that. And it's only $1.99. I mean, this is a cheap book. Or if you're buying previews, the big previews magazine, you get this for free. It's a separate magazine and everything. It's just, if you pick up a copy of previews and you see Image Plus sitting there on the shelf, just grab it, because you get that for nothing. It's printed right there on the cover, right underneath the price tag. Can't beat that.
Nice.
Kelly, what else is on your list?
I, as always, I think, you know, the, and I have in the past, if the Lantern books aren't up to par, I'll call them out. I'm not a, you know, diehard, you know, not going to talk bad about my favorite book, but, Green Lantern, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps has been another book that, I've been really enjoying. It really, I think, the dynamic that they've managed to kind of put in this book where, you know, finally, you know, has never been a real good leader type, but they've got John where he should be, where he always should be, you know, kind of, in charge and kind of leading the core. And you've got Guy and you've got, now we've got Kyle back, which I'm not too keen on the fact that they kind of stripped him of his White Lantern abilities or powers, because I really like the fact that, you know, I was kind of really comfortable with him being, you know, the White Lantern. Mm-hmm. And him kind of becoming a Green Lantern again, you know, that's good. I mean, I'm not, you know, completely down in the mouth about it, but just kind of hated that it happened. But just a lot of good. I mean, the characters all mesh real well. They're well written. The whole kind of story arc with the Yellow Lantern and Green Lantern Corps kind of working together, I thought was at first ludicrous and kind of, wow, someone's really, you know, trying to stretch my limits of my own imagination, but I was really starting to kind of come around to it after a while. I mean, it was really well done. So, you know,
I was a big fan of that arc. That one, the only thing that I kind of found negative about it was the Saronic heel turn.
That still
bugs me a little bit, though.
Mm-hmm. It does me too.
Though I totally get the reasoning that they put in there. And I think that it's got to come back around. I think that the logical conclusion is that she comes back around and, we have a way for her to be back in green again. That just seems like the way back. Like right now things are just really bad. And yeah, Kyle did a kind of shady thing there. So that's on him. And I can't say he didn't deserve to be hit in the face. And I can't say that I didn't take a small measure of joy in seeing him get hit in the face. But that is also neither here nor there. Strong book, one that I absolutely highly recommend as well. And this new arc with Orion and the New Gods. I gotta say, Robert Venditti is that guy who really tapped into the idea of putting the New Gods and the Green Lantern Corps together and seeing what could happen if you let these two elements play in the same sandbox. And it works generally. I'm glad that this isn't a huge crossover story and he can just like focus in on how this is supposed to work. And it's tying into metal. There's an nth metal tie, that's happening in that story. That's tying into the larger, metal event that's going on over, in its own book. But speaking of that, I did pick up Metal number one. People know about that. If you guys heard the pod blast I did with Todd Weber, you know that I reviewed and got in depth on the Metal event as a book, as a miniseries. And of course, it's great to see Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo back together doing a big Justice League event. And, oh boy, there's some crazy stuff that happens at the end of that book. So if you haven't read Metal, or if you've got it and you want to hear the in-depth thoughts on it, you can go listen to that pod blast that you can find on the placetobenation.com. Or you can find it, I'm sure, in our Podbean or iTunes feed. Now, the Green Lantern titles have both been, I think, pretty tremendous lately. And I hate that Sam Humphries is leaving Green Lanterns. That makes me pretty sad, actually, because he's added so much to the mythos in such a short amount of time. And he's going to be greatly missed. Hopefully Tim Seeley is going to do a good job on that book when he takes it over. But in my mind, those are some big shoes to fill, because Sam Humphries did a lot for Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. Really evolved those characters in a positive way. So I've enjoyed the hell out of that book. And I think it's going to be fun, though, because Tim Seeley is going to be writing a story with Bullfunga the Unrelenting. That we just saw him over in Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps as well. Had a pretty good reintroduction at the outset of the current story arc, or the part right at the end of the last story arc. It was good stuff. And of course he's hilarious. And if you know anything about Green Lantern animated adaptations, it's hard not to hear Rowdy Roddy Piper's voice whenever you read Bullfunga.
Yeah,
because that's good stuff. But anyway, not to tell tales out of skew, as the hard traveling fanboys already went in depth on that one with their look back at the animated Emerald Knights story. That was good stuff. But I think Sam Humphries is headed for bigger things at DC. He's mentioned on Twitter that the only reason he's leaving Green Lanterns is because DC offered him a really big gig and he couldn't say no. So whatever that is, it was big enough to get him to leave Green Lanterns. And I don't know what books are open right now, or if they're launching a new title that just hasn't been announced. But Brian Hitch, as everybody knows, is leaving Justice League at issue 31. And then there will be two issues that tie into Dark Knight's Metal. One is written by Robert Venditti, and the other is written by Joshua Williamson. But then issue 34, Justice League 34, should be the new creative team. And I'm thinking that creative team might just include Sam Humphries. And if it does, Justice League could very well find its way back into my pull list.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Brian Hitch. He's a talented artist. He's an okay writer. But I'm going to be very glad to see that change up. But hey, Brian Hitch is going to be fine. He's going over to work on that Hawkman Found with Jeff Lemire. So he'll be drawing that while Jeff is writing it. So that's not so bad. And I'm certainly planning to pick that up. Anyway, good picks on the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. I like that we get all the main Earth Lantern, or the original Earth Lanterns, there together to play off each other, which is something they hadn't been able to do in a little while.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten just how much I enjoy the dynamic of those guys working together. I mean, you could put Guy Gardner with any one of them and it's going to be fun, but I think that it's it's more fun to have Guy Gardner with John Stewart or with Kyle Rayner.
Yeah. I do too.
Like, he and Hal are very similar to each other, in a lot of ways. So it's not necessarily as much fun because there's nobody for Guy to play, play off of. There's nobody playing straight man to Guy Gardner if Hal Jordan is in the room. But I'm kind of missing the Sinestro Corps being right there with them, because just as we were getting that Arkillo and Guy Gardner partnership going, they imploded. And I'm like, okay, I get it, because I mean, how are you going to make that work? Because there was no way Arkillo was going to, renounce the Sinestro Corps and go green.
No.
So it had to end this way. But man, I loved that pairing. Those two together was fun.
Mm-hmm. It was.
I hope we see more of that.
Yeah, I do too. I felt the same way when all of this was kind of falling apart. I was like, wow, we just got all this together. We just got this set up, and felt like the proverbial rug had been yanked out from underneath us for, you know, I was like, this was such a good partnership that was really excited to see where it was going to go. So, yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get it again later on down the road. I'm sure this story is not over. There is a lot more to go.
Yeah.
And of course we saw Sinestro. Sinestro is back. He came back at the end of that story arc. A little worse for wear, but you know what? He's going to be making his presence felt. And speaking of which, he does make his presence felt in another book over in Superman number 29 that came out recently. Now, this is a fill-in arc written by Keith Champagne but drawn by Doug Monkey. Doug is a regular artist on Superman right now, so they've kept a consistent look for the title. But, of course, Keith has stepped in to do this fill-in arc, one of two fill-in arcs that are going to be happening before the big story that is going to see the return of Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, called Imperious Lex, which they've both said on Twitter that is absolutely still happening. They just needed more time to work on it. So we got a couple of fill-in arcs that are happening in the meantime. Now, fill-ins being what they are, sometimes I know I've been turned off by them before and been like, oh, well, this isn't any good. But Superman 29 was actually a damn fine issue. The crux of it is that a bunch of kids around Metropolis have gone missing, and even Superman is having trouble finding them. You know, and if Superman is having trouble finding these kids, you know something crazy has happened.
Yeah.
And he, as a parent himself, is, you know, relating to these distraught parents on that level, because he is worried about what might happen to John. He couldn't watch him 24/7. But if something, you know, superpowered or like truly nefarious is happening, that would be really terrifying to him. That's like one of his worst fears since becoming a dad. And as we see, these kids are running around playing a game that's very similar to Pokemon Go, except it's a Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew game, which is I thought it was a nice nod. It was a nice touch.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, the thing that's taking these kids is Parallax.
Huh.
And that, because Parallax has become very small in his time away since the end of the last story arc where we saw him, where he quite literally exploded along with, with Hal Jordan and with Sinestro. But Parallax is back. He's on Earth. He's taking children and feeding off their fear to get more powerful. And long story short, Superman finds out about all this, tracks him down, but he can't free the kids because of the tie to Parallax. So Superman offers himself up as a host for Parallax so that he would release the kids. And Parallax, of course, is going to jump on this. He's like, oh, I like that idea. Superpowers, like, you're a Kryptonian. That puts me in a good position. I'm going to do that. And of course, the look of Superman and Sinestro Corps armor is pretty awesome. But that last page, when Sinestro shows up and says, you have something that belongs to me, it's setting up for a big throwdown in issue 30. And I can't wait to get my hands on that. I'm very excited to see Superman versus Sinestro. That should be fun. Even in its fill-in arcs, Superman continues to be the kind of book that I really enjoy. And now I think there's a reason for Lantern fans to go out there and give Superman a look, because your boy Sinestro just showed up and things are going to get fun.
Yeah.
So that's another one that I highly recommend. What else is on your list?
Well, speaking of John, Super Sons is another is another really, really good DC book that
good stuff.
Kind of, I think, in the vein of kind of what I would call, not that DC comics aren't kid friendly, but this is one that this would be really good for kids, because it's you're getting to see like two kids get out and get into trouble and they have powers. Well, mine is Damien, but I mean, Damien's got a particular set of skills that,
and he will find you.
And he will find you.
And he will kill you.
And maybe. Yeah, possibly, maybe.
Maybe, but he'll kill you.
if Bruce is there, probably not. But if he's not, I mean, but it's a good story. It's I think one of the best books that DC has created. I mean, because this is kind of in the vein of Superman, Batman, when they had their series a few years back. But on a different level.
It does have a little bit of that feel going on. It's got some fantastical stuff, but it's also, I feel like it takes the spirit of that, of the old Teen Titans animated show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, of course it's Damian and John, not the larger Teen Titans, but still it has that kind of feel to it where they're having fun, but there's also an air of seriousness to it whenever there needs to be.
Yeah.
It could feel like a high drama action series to younger kids, whereas adults could read it and we just have fun with it because it's just kids making mischief. And
yep.
It's a lot of fun. And Jorge Jimenez's art is absolutely gorgeous. He was the perfect choice to draw that book. And of course, there's Peter Tomasi who's writing it, and man, I can't think of anybody who writes Damien better.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think the it's written well. The art fits the style of the book, and I'm hoping that in this book we kind of see, because like, Jonathan really doesn't have, like, you think, oh, well, he's got Superboy. I mean, Damian, he's got his pal Superboy there with him, so he's got a little miniature super to an extent, but Jonathan's powers aren't really have manifest. I mean, they're not has, his powers haven't manifested fully, and they won't for some time, but there's still certain things like he really hasn't mastered yet. So it's,
he can't fly, for one thing, and
he can't,
he's got heat vision that comes and goes. And that's – I mean
– and even – Damien even calls him on it sometimes. gives him guff over it,
Oh, if there's one thing that Damien does so well in this book is that he gives John Kent so much grief. And that's – but it's perfect for that. Like I love reading that dynamic because John is this kind of, he's the good kid. He's the one that, will only risk getting in trouble if he feels like it's absolutely imperative to do so.
Yeah.
Though he does have his mother's tendency towards, being a little too curious at times.
Yeah.
And he certainly inherited her ability to be a smartass.
Yeah.
Because he's not as quick as Damien, mostly because he's younger, but he's got that lane wit every once in a while, and he really lets Damien have it. So he can give as good as he gets.
Which I
love.
Yeah, I do too. And that's kind of what this whole book is this watching this friendship evolve and grow. Yeah. And it's really good. It's a good, like I said, I think this book could be, for younger kids, it could be for older. I mean, it's because it's really, I think it's geared towards that mindset that here you have two young kids and they're have this, this draw to kind of go out and do good or in Damien's, mindset to, get the bad guy.
And we had a guest shot from the Teen Titans in the current story arc, Planet of the Capes, which I am I haven't read a bad issue of this book yet. It has been on fire since it started. And I hope it continues for a long, long time, because there's a lot of room to explore where these two characters could go. And it really does feel like we're watching the evolution of young Superman and young Batman. But them growing up together is going to give them a whole different dynamic than what Clark and Bruce have. And that's something that I can deeply appreciate if DC will truly commit to it and allow that to happen. But, I mean, as people know, it takes a long time for DC to actually age their characters. And relatively speaking, Damian aged up to 13 years old pretty fast in comic book time.
Yeah.
I mean, how long has Dick Grayson been Nightwing?
Quite some time.
Yeah, Dick Grayson has been stuck somewhere between 27 and 31 for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily see that changing anytime soon, but
no, I think once you hit a plateau of a certain age, I think DC kind of locks you in there for a bit, you know.
They do. Like, once they find that sweet spot, they like to keep you there. And 13 is a good age for Damian. Honestly, I'd take him on up to about 15 before I stopped, just so we could get John aged up to be old enough to be in the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Maybe put Damian at 16, since he's 13 and John is supposedly 10. I'd say let's get him up, you know, get John Teen Titans eligible.
Yeah.
But again, that may take a while. So I would say people just sit back and enjoy the ride of Super Sons, because it is a hell of a ride. It is so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And speaking of Bat Family, I picked up this first issue of this new miniseries called Nightwing, The New Order. This is by Kyle Higgins and Trevor McCarthy. Image fans might recognize that creative team from the book Cowl that ran for, I think, about 11, 12 issues a couple of years ago. But Kyle Higgins also wrote Nightwing for nearly 30 issues in the New 52. And he did a really good job with it. He's got a great handle on the voice of Dick Grayson. And this series, this six-issue miniseries, is an Elseworlds title. And it picks up a good bit in the future. Dick is old enough to be leading the police force, which is what he works for now. Some massive event happened somewhere along the way that Dick participated in the destruction of the superhero community. He took away the powers of metahumans on Earth. And we don't know the full reason as to why he did it yet. But as I read this book, I was like, this is very much Nightwing. This feels like Dick Grayson. He's still the same guy he always was, but he's leading, you know, this charge of no metahumans allowed.
Yeah.
And it took me aback a little bit seeing him in this light. But as the story went on, I was like, no, this feels very much like Dick Grayson. And he wouldn't have come to this point if there hadn't been like some massive triggering event. I don't know what it was yet, but I'm intrigued enough to keep going, especially seeing him struggle with the weight and the consequences of that decision. Because even though he professes that it was the right thing to do, you still see these moments where he's internally struggling with it, because he can see how he let certain people down. And if there's one thing that will always bug Dick Grayson, it's whenever he lets someone down that is someone that he loves or like truly cares about. And if he disappoints someone, like, let's say, for example, Alfred, if he felt like Alfred was really disappointed in him, or if he had let Alfred down, that's going to weigh heavy on him. And that is quite literally what a section of this book is like, when he and Alfred are having a very honest family conversation, and they get into that that debate, being on opposite sides of it. And I really appreciated the way that Kyle Higgins wrote this. This also adds a very interesting wrinkle for Dick Grayson, because in this story, he is a father, and the story is actually narrated by his son. So that adds a whole new dynamic to this, and especially whenever they reveal who the mother of his son is. And they do it in a really, like, kind of oh shit moment kind of way. So this is a book that I highly recommend Nightwing fans to check out, or if you're looking for something very different outside of DC continuity, give this a look. You might enjoy it. Just remember, this is not traditional Nightwing in most senses. Though, as you read it, I think that you will very much recognize Dick Grayson. So, Kelly, what else do you pick up?
Supergirl is another one of my books that I've been following since the Rebirth relaunch and have been enjoying. Well, let me preface that with saying it. The art was the one thing that I didn't enjoy too much the first part of the series. Their art has changed since then, and it's better. But I've just enjoyed how they have kind of taken aspects from the television show and kind of incorporated them into the book to align with it to a degree that, you know, if you have people that maybe never read Supergirl before, or maybe even read comics, but enjoyed the television show, maybe picked the book up, there are some semblances there, which that's nice to kind of have that, but it not be strong-armed or done in a way where it's not where it doesn't feel completely right. I mean, they've kind of dealt with a lot of different themes, you know, the Argo citizens, you know, her father. but it's been a really good, entertaining book. I've really enjoyed it. And again, it's different from the Supergirl, the New 52, that came out of the box very angry and not the Supergirl again that I can always remember, kind of being good natured and kind of, you know, wanting to kind of be like her cousin and really filled with this whole hope of doing the, you know, doing the right thing. She's not the angry Supergirl that we had in the New 52, but I didn't, you know, the Supergirl series I've always had a soft spot for. And even before the New 52, the one that ran before it, that was the Kara from the Batman Superman, where she was reintroduced, I should say. So, I mean, you know, she's come a long way since then. And I think for the better. I think they've gotten some good people on the book. And again, you know, it's another strong character, another strong female character that, you know, DC really knows how to build and how to kind of write and kind of, they know how to handle their female characters, and they know how to represent them in a way that I hate to say Marvel's just not, other than Jessica Drew.
And Jessica Jones.
And Jessica Jones just don't – well, I meant Jessica Jones, not Jessica Drew, because Spider-Woman's kind of not even on the landscape right now, that Marvel's just been having a hard time, I think, with trying to kind of put out there for folks to say, hey, you know, we've got strong female characters too. They do. They just – they can't get the right people to do them. So it you know, their books don't last very long.
I would say Kamala Khan is a good example of a very strong female character for Marvel right now. The whole Ms. Marvel book has been really good under G. Willow Wilson.
Yeah.
And I haven't read it, but I understand that the Mighty Captain Marvel is a pretty good book, too. Yeah. I've just heard that, but I know for a fact that Ms. Marvel is a good book. And
yeah.
That Jessica Jones is also a fantastic book. And I kind of miss the Spider-Woman book that was running there for a while that Dennis Hopeless was writing. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I understand where you come from on Supergirl. I was reading that for a while, but I wound up dropping it because I don't know, that story arc where they were in the Phantom Zone really lost me.
Yeah.
That one just didn't hit. I have kind of come to not really enjoy Steve Orlando's writing all that much. His writing on Justice League of America also lost me, although I read a preview of the newest Justice League of America issue where they're in the Microverse, and I started to kind of get pulled back in, like, oh, we're finally like hitting on a story that I really want to see where it goes. And
yeah.
This might be worth tracking down that first issue and getting on this book for a little bit until I see where this is going, because it's also dealing with the larger Rebirth mystery. And that's a big deal. So I may need to do that. I do like the new artist on Supergirl. I was pretty excited that they were getting a new artist, but I'm getting a little tired of when Kara speaks in English, she doesn't know how to use conjunctions.
Mm-hmm.
But when she speaks in Kryptonian, she does.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I get it. I understand why you're doing it, but it's time to move past that.
Yeah.
It's time for her to start speaking like a person.
Right.
Like a normal person and not like a robot, because that's how I read her dialogue, is it feels very robotic to me. And some of the support cast just sucks. You know, it's just not there. And I mean, I like the way that Cat Grant is written in the book. I very much appreciate that they do kind of a Calista Flockhart take on the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that the other members of the Danvers family are written, though making everybody members of the DEO was a little on the nose. But
yeah.
maybe this book could use a little Martian Manhunter. You know, that would be something that would certainly get my attention and make me want to read more of it. But for now, I've kind of left Supergirl, and I don't really haven't seen anything to really pull me back yet. But I'm glad that you're enjoying the book, and I'm sure that other people are definitely still enjoying it.
Yeah.
But we mentioned Marvel a minute ago, and there is one book that well, aside from Jessica Jones, which is tremendous right now, they got another book out that I am really loving called Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. This is written by Chip Zdarsky, drawn by Andy Kubert, and it is every bit the classic Spider-Man that I know and love. This is quippy and self-deprecating, just fun goofball Spider-Man. But he's also dealing with some pretty major supervillains at the same time, and a pretty cool mystery in the backdrop of it all. So if you've become kind of disillusioned with billionaire Peter Parker over an Amazing Spider-Man, or you're one of those that didn't want to read an out-of-continuity Spider-Man book like the absolutely great Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, this is the book for you. This is the Spider-Man book that I wanted to have, and after experiencing just 3 issues of this, I so wish that Chip Zdarsky would just be given the keys to the Spider-Man kingdom, because he gets how to write this character. He makes him funny. He incorporates the old Parker luck into things. He's calling back some old friendships. And of course, this first story arc has featured him teaming with his old buddy, the Human Torch. And you know, when these two get together, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
This is good stuff. This is the kind of Spider-Man book that I always want to have on the shelf. Glad to see that we finally get one. And it has some good action, some really good tense moments too. Some classic Spider-Man confrontation. This third issue featured a really great fight with the Kingpin. And some just laugh out loud dialogue from Spider-Man himself. So I can't give this book a high enough recommendation. So if you haven't started on this one, it's only three issues in too. So if you haven't started on Spider-Man, Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, now is the time for you to jump on this book. This is funny stuff. Really great handling of the character from Chip Zdarsky. So get on that book if you haven't already. And what's the last one on your list, Kelly?
Well, I think we kind of already gone over it, and I'll just say the Green Lanterns is just as good as Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Simon and Simon Baz and Jessica are just such a good team, and the growth that we've seen Jessica have over the course of this series, she's really kind of coming into her own as a Green Lantern. And over the last couple of issues, especially with Simon kind of being without a ring, so to speak, she's really taking care of him and shown a little bit of leadership skills. And I'm praising DC for having a really smart, strong character Jessica Cruz is, and she's one of my favorite new characters that they've kind of, and I mean, they introduced her a few years back, She's one of my favorites, because I really think you've seen a lot of character growth from her kind of shut in, anxiety ridden, her own mental, situations that she's had. And I just love that. I love that she has kind of grown in such a really good way. And that's the good thing about seeing a character progress over the course of the series that, we're reading right now. And even Simon too has come to a point where, he's not carrying the gun. He's kind of seeing, he doesn't have that as kind of a backup anymore. He's kind of relying more on himself, and he's definitely, I'm interested in what this Emerald Site is that he keeps having ever so often. So his character's grown too. Both of them have been really well done, and of course, well written and well developed. So, I mean, I can't say a whole lot more other than that. If you're looking for a really good Green Lantern book, and like I said, Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, is a good book too. If you're looking for another book like that, then Green Lanterns is definitely worth your pickup. I mean, it's good that they don't have like a gazillion Green Lantern titles. It's good that they've kind of fit that mesh into having two books, but they're really different. But they're still kind of connected. They can kind of come in to each other's book and kind of go out and not mess things up too bad.
Yeah, they've done a really good job balancing the two titles between their characters, and occasionally you see like Simon and Jessica pop up or mentioned over in Hal Jordan the Green Lantern Corps, or you see like there was a story arc where Simon and Jessica actually went to MOGO and had to undergo mm-hmm. Basic lantern training, which is actually how we got to the current story arc we're in now, where they're flung into the distant past and training the original seven Green Lanterns. Which is a pretty fun thing to watch, actually. If you if you've been following the book since the beginning, it's quite a progression for Jessica Cruz. And also for Simon Baz. I'm absolutely loving what they have done with that character. Glad that he dropped the gun, that Sam Humphries wrote a really good story about him giving that up and moving forward, just becoming a better Green Lantern. And that's something that I also highly recommend people do. Like, it's one of those books that just gets better and better as it goes along. Its first story arc with the Red Lanterns was good, but it had some hit and miss moments in there too. But I think the book really hit its stride with the Phantom Lantern. When they did that story arc, I was like, okay, now we're cooking. From then on, the book was just a must read every couple of weeks when it was coming out. So I'm right there with you. Yeah, Green Lanterns is continuing to be a great read every couple of weeks. Like we said before, sad that Sam Humphries is going to be leaving the book, but I think Tim Seeley is a very capable writer, and I think he's going to do a fine job on this book. Though I've not really been loving his Nightwing lately, but I think that Simon and Jessica are more his wheelhouse, and going more cosmic scale will probably be better for his writing.
Yeah.
And speaking of cosmic, the last thing that I want to mention before we go to a break is I picked up the first issue of the maxi series Mr. Miracle from Tom King and Mitch Gerrits. Of course, the Dynamite creative team behind the Sheriff of Babylon. Now, this is a very different kind of comic than what we normally see today. It's laid out very classically, and by that I mean it has some old very 70s feel art to it, but with the six panel pages. Like, every page is six panels. Or, excuse me, not six panel. It's the nine panel grid, if you're familiar with that that layout.
Yeah.
And I really love how they've interspersed this as Mr. Miracle dealing with, honestly, I think he's dealing with depression. He's kind of reached the end of his game. Like, what can he not escape from? Like, what would be the greatest challenge for him to escape from? And the greatest challenge, of course, is death. So this book opens with Mr. Miracle appearing to have attempted suicide. And of course he survives that. So did he survive death? Did he escape it? But of course, Orion shows up and tries to beat some sense into him by using the Granny Goodness training technique, which Barda doesn't appreciate very much, because Barda straight up looks at Orion and says, "The only person who can teach is Granny, and you ain't Granny."
Yeah.
So she kind of puts Orion in his place. Love how big Barda is written in this book. But there's also the looming threat of Darkseid, who Orion informs Scott Free and Barda that Darkseid has achieved in getting the anti-life equation. And you start to see little hints of things in the book that suggest that maybe Darkseid has already started to rewrite reality, or is experimenting with rewriting reality. And Barda and Mr. Miracle are going to have to go back to Apocalypse to confront this this looming threat, as Highfather, who is the leader of the New Gods, has apparently been killed by Darkseid. And it now falls to Orion to be the new Highfather, which also doesn't sit well with Barda.
Yeah.
But there are... I love the symbolism of this book, and I love the way that Gerrits presents it. He has Mr. Miracle written as kind of a celebrity. You know, he's an escape artist and a very famous one. But it all feels very Kirby-esque too. Like it's very modern, but it's also very 70s. So if you are a fan of that Jack Kirby New Gods feel, especially the 70s take on those characters, if you like that, then I think this is going to be a great series for you to follow. Tom King, of course, is one of the most prolific writers in comics right now. He has been making quite a name for himself in the last few years. His current Batman run is also very good. And, of course, like I mentioned before, he's got the Sheriff of Babylon, and he did The Vision for 12 issues for Marvel before signing exclusively to DC. Also another book that everyone should go and check out. That's a tremendous read. Definitely. Kelly, I think you would love this book. I think you need to read Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, that's one that I've got to see if my comic shop can get. I mean, since it's DC, I'm pretty sure they could get that. That's one of those books that kind of slipped past me. I knew it was coming out, but I didn't completely know when. So yeah.
It's only got one issue out, but issue two is about to come out. So this is a book that I really think you need to read.
I definitely will. I'll definitely check it out.
So yeah, I think you're going to be very happy that you did. Tremendous, tremendous book. Can't say enough good things about it. And if you guys want to hear more in depth about Mr. Miracle and you want a little history lesson on the character too, Todd Weber did a great pod blast on Mr. Miracle number one. Just a little while ago, you can find that on placetobenation.com. And, of course, you can find it through our Podbean and iTunes podcast and Podblast feeds. With that, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up in comics that we're looking forward to, as well as, of course, giving a little preview taste of the returning comic book television shows, which are coming up pretty quick because we are in the fall. We're just about to be in the fall season. So not long from now, we will be right back in the thick of things with all our favorite shows. There's a couple of movies coming out too. And we might have a little speculation on a sequel to one of the bigger hits this summer being Spider-Man Homecoming. So with that, stay right with us. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to continue our Talk and Shop episode of Sellers Points. Of course, we talked all sorts of good comics in the first half, and we're going to kind of continue that here in the second half, but we're going to take a look ahead to some stuff that's coming up later in this year, and some teases for stuff that could bleed on over into to 2018. And the thing to start with, Kelly, is something that I've kind of started getting a little bit more excited about lately, something that I wasn't really all that high on at first, and that's Marvel Legacy. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm, like, super excited about Marvel Legacy, like, a whole, like, oh, shit, I'm about to add a whole bunch of Marvel books to my pull list. I wouldn't say that, but there are certain aspects of Legacy that have gotten my attention. Specifically, Jason Aaron and Issad Ribic's Legacy, Marvel Legacy number one, that's going to be coming out here very, very soon. And the big tease just this past week was that a major Marvel icon is going to be making their return in Marvel Legacy number one. Now, and of course, immediately speculation has gone all over the place with who that could be. There are a few dead characters out there that could certainly be coming back, but only a couple that really ring as iconic in my mind. And the three that really come to mind are all X-Men characters. So, could be an interesting time, but I think that the smart money is probably on Wolverine. On the original Wolverine coming back. So
yeah.
That would probably be smart money bet. That's, I think, where the most people are probably leaning. But I don't know. Do you have any other guesses as to who you think that could be? If it's not Wolverine, is there somebody that you think it could possibly be?
Maybe Professor X. That comes to mind. You know, he's definitely an iconic character for Marvel. Be nice to bring him back, especially after the way they treated him, you know, in the abysmal Avengers versus X-Men, and then into, you know, that whole Phoenix crap. Yeah. So, I mean, I would, you know, love to see the character come back. Though I'm just to give you a heads up, this is where I'm at. I'm on the verge of kind of boycotting Marvel. There's only two books that I'm reading right now, and I read the Generations book with Hawkeye in it, and there were a few things in that that just really set me off, and I think I'm at that point like I was back when Heroes Reborn happened, and I was so disgusted with the way things were going with Marvel Comics that I think I'm on the verge of completely just walking away from them for a while and distancing myself. because I can't stand the way the Marvel landscape is right now. And all it does is anger me. Everything. Like I said, the only two books that I'm reading is Jean Grey and X-Men Blue. And those are really, for me, the only two saving graces that Marvel has right now, at least for me. So it's and everything that I picked up and read, you know, that I was excited about last year didn't turn out at all like I thought they would be. And in the end, disappointed me more than anything else. So.
And I can appreciate that, though. One day I'm going to get you to read Jessica Jones and Jason Aaron's Thor run, which has continued to be really great.
I know I've heard a lot about those books. And the other part too is the whole Secret Empire and what, you know, how Nick Spencer. I'm not a big fan of Nick Spencer, so it you know, I read how the Secret Empire ended, and it was, I called it to myself. This is what I said. This is how it's going to end, and sure enough, it did. And I wasn't patting myself on the back for my, oh, I knew how. I was like, well, yeah, it's another shit book. Good going, Marvel. You know,
I haven't read Secret Empire. I know our good buddy Nick Duke is very high on the book and has been since it started. It's one that I am planning to read whenever it hits Marvel Unlimited. So I will be checking it out that way. I haven't read all of Nick Spencer's Captain America, though. What I did read of it, I actually kind of enjoyed. And I know I'm going to be kind of on the outs with certain people for liking that book.
No, I mean, if you like Nick Spencer, I mean, I do. Hey, I mean, I just don't like. Yeah, I just most of his stuff I'm just not a fan of. Yeah. And that's just me. You know?
Well, the hot rumor out there is that Nick Spencer might be taking over Amazing Spider-Man and Dan Slott might be gone. So if that happens, hey, I might be making room for Amazing Spider-Man back in the old pull list. But
yeah.
But there is one other book. Well, we haven't finished discussing who else it could be coming back in Legacy. And there's one other character, Dark Horse character, who has also not been treated well in the last few years, Cyclops.
Yeah.
Where's Scott Summers at? So that's another possibility, I think, who could make his return. Now, this could be a setup, too. We could be looking at not just one character coming back, but a few. And, I mean, if Marvel is trying to really reestablish legacy characters, there are a couple out there that could come back from the dead. The original Captain Marvel, who has been dead for a long time, could also make his big grandiose return. Now, that's not to say that he will. I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that that is happening, but it's just a thought.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know that coming up in The Mighty Thor, in Mighty Thor 700, we are being set up for the return of the Odinson to be the one and only Thor again. And sadly, I feel like we're headed towards the death of Jane Foster, which kind of sucks because she's been really great in Mighty Thor. I have really been enjoying that book a lot, and very excited to see where the book is going, of course, because Jason Aaron has just absolutely been killing it on this book. Russell Dauterman has been a fantastic artist, and I feel like we're building towards their big crescendo, towards their big ending, and this could be it. And it would make sense, too, because the other hot rumor is that Jason Aaron and Issad Ribic are going to be taking over Avengers, which, if true, I'll actually be buying that in print. Because I'm going to need to hold that in my hands.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of stuff that we don't know quite yet. And, of course, Mark Waid hasn't wrapped up his Avengers run yet. We know that when Legacy starts, he's got at least one more story arc that he's doing along with Champions, which he supposedly is also going to be wrapping up. Because
good.
Because we also know that Mark Waid and Chris Samnee are going to be taking over Captain America. And that's huge in my mind, because that's the Daredevil team that really made me love that character again. and I am about to see them take on Captain America, I'm going to have to go buy that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very pumped for that. As I've said on other shows, I think that's the book I'm most excited about, like easily the most excited about out of Legacy. And, of course, the continuing Jessica Jones. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, is also continuing in Legacy and actually getting a Legacy numbering. They're going to put it somewhere in the 200s, I believe. And I'm digging that. I am really excited about where those books are headed. Just hoping that whenever the creative team shifts happen, that that we get something on the level of that Mark Waid and Chris Samnee on Captain America. You know, something that makes me kind of stand up and take notice and be like, "Huh, I'm gonna have to get up on that." But those three characters are those being Cyclops, Professor X, and of course the original Wolverine are the prime suspects for return in Marvel Legacy number one. Of course, that's going to come out on September 27th. Written by the amazing and Alabama's own Jason Aaron. And it's a 50-page book. It's a $5.99 book, but it's 50 pages. So you are getting your money's worth there. But at the same time, I'm also kind of looking at them like, you know, DC Rebirth number one was also about that same size for $2.99 whenever it dropped. So who's that? You know, I'm just pointing that out. Yeah. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. That's just an observation. But we've got other stuff coming up later this year as well. So what's pinging your list, Kelly? What's got you excited for later on?
I just have kind of gotten into the Metal series a little bit. I picked up the first issue of Metal. I didn't pick up a previous book, which I read up on. So I'm not really worried about picking it up, but I'm interested in this. This looks like a really, interesting story, not too hyped on like the first cover, the cover that I picked up. It really was reminiscent of like the gaudiness of the 90s, but I'll let that slide, you know. So I guess the way the logo was, and just at least I know they had different covers, and probably what I got was just like your basic cover for the series. But
was it the Metal Devil Horns cover?
It might have been. I don't know. It just looked like, when I picked it up, I was like, God, this looks like something out of the 90s. You think they could have come up with a better font and maybe, you know, a better, you know, but it's not so much about the cover. It's about the content. And the content was top notch. And I'm looking forward to this Watchmen. There's a book that came out last week that, again, my comic shop didn't get. Had to tell them to get me a copy of it. I'll have to check that out when it. But I'm interested in that. Just a lot of the things that I guess mainly DC. The relaunch and the Legacy and the stuff for Marvel a month or two ago, I was kind of interested in, and now, as I said earlier, I'm really not. I'm having to really debate on my standing with Marvel. If I, you know, I'm just gonna, you know, am I gonna do it? Am I gonna pull the trigger and just walk away and just give me and Marvel a break? Because they're, in my opinion, my humble opinion, they're garbage right now. And they're not treating their fans properly. And maybe there is a handful of books. I'm not saying everything Marvel putting out is garbage. There's a handful of really good titles, but that's not how Marvel should be. You know, Marvel should be putting out in excess. Every one of their books should be good. You know, or at least a 90% haul of their books should be good. And really their mainstays should be. But I mean, they're unrecognizable. So, I mean, it's, and I'm not putting a hate on Marvel. I'm just saying I'm disappointed and I'm saddened by the fact that I'm having to face this again, you know, years later, where I you know, back, I said, when Heroes Were Born, I decided to step away. That's kind of how I am now. And even with the legacy, and I was completely wrong when I said Marvel will never renumber their books. We're never going to see that again. And they proved me wrong, which I'm happy for. But at the same time, that's not enough to get me to come back. Good writing and good storytelling and treating their characters well is the other thing. And so I just have to, you know, say for right now, DC has got my attention as far as what's coming out. And Metal and the whole mystery behind Mr. Oz and the setup for that is very interesting. And I'm crossing my fingers down the road that maybe, you know, we'll see a Legion book come out at some point in time. There's so many little things that they've dropped over the last couple of years that I'm hoping that maybe we'll see some new titles come out, and maybe Legion will be one of them.
Yeah, here's hoping for a return of Legion. And of course, we saw the kind of the dust up on social media the other day when Jonathan Hickman and Jim Lee were spotted having lunch together, and Jim Lee actually put out a little Instagram post talking about how I guess he was talking DC Comics stuff with Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah.
Who hasn't been at Marvel in a little while, has just been doing his thing over at Image, putting out his creator-owned stuff. And my God, how awesome would it be for a Jonathan Hickman Legion of Superheroes book?
That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
if that were to happen, I think Legion fans would have every reason to just like throw a freaking ticker tape parade through the middle of Times Square in New York, and go, or down the streets of Burbank, California, and be like, "Yep, we have just won the freaking lottery, getting Jonathan Hickman on a Legion of Superheroes book." That would be tremendous. That would get me to buy a Legion book. I wouldn't miss that for the world. But here's hoping that maybe that'll be the case, or maybe Jonathan Hickman is going to take over Justice League. That'd be a hell of a thing.
Oh yeah,
or the best thing in the world for him to do both.
Yeah,
to do a hand in hand story of Justice League and Legion of Superheroes, not unlike how he did Avengers and New Avengers for Marvel, that led up to Secret Wars. Because both of those books were great all the way through, and then Secret Wars was amazing. So that's just a little fantasy booking there. Of course, later in the year, coming up in November, Geoff Johns and Gary Frank are back together to do a little Doomsday Clock, which is the next part of the big Rebirth mystery, and is going to actually bring the DC characters into direct conflict with Watchmen characters. Dr. Manhattan is on the cover of Doomsday Clock number one. That was revealed recently, and yeah, it popped me pretty good. I was a big fan of that Gary Frank cover. I like the lenticular cover too, where they took a Dave Gibbons Rorschach image and it molds from a Rorschach mask, like from a standard Rorschach picture, and then the mask changes to show the emblems of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, which I thought that was pretty cool. That was a neat thing.
Yeah.
But before we even get there, we've got the identity of Mr. Oz is going to be revealed pretty soon in Action Comics. That's coming up. That's going to be written by Dan Jurgens. And I'm sure that they've known for a long time who Mr. Oz actually is, and they've dropped hints all along. Some of the more recent stuff that happened in a fill-in story by Rob Williams in Action Comics seems to suggest that Mr. Oz has some Kryptonian abilities, because he displayed heat vision at one point. And that kind of took me back. I was like, really? Who could this guy be? Who is this guy? They've done a good job of like throwing me, and I think throwing everybody, because everybody was saying immediately, oh, he's got to be Ozymandias. I don't think he is. I don't think he's Ozymandias at all. One of my personal theories probably isn't going to work anymore because he displayed the Kryptonian-esque abilities. But one idea I had for a little while was that he might be the pre-New 52 Lex Luthor. Which would have just popped me big. I would have loved that. I was like, okay, that would have been trippy. And there's I've seen a number of theories out there. Of course, a lot of us have been saying that Superboy Prime was somehow involved in all this almost from the jump because we haven't seen Superboy Prime in forever. Could he be Mr. Oz? Very low possibility there, but I think that that at this point anything is possible. There was a mention of a classic DC character called Pariah, who hasn't appeared in a very long time.
Yeah,
that would be a deep cut character to bring back. Some I've even seen suggest that it could be Jor-El, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me because Mr. Oz always refers to him as Clark and not as Kal-El.
Yeah.
So I don't really buy that one. And like I said, all this stuff has been thrown out there. I don't know who he is. I have no idea. I spitball and I work myself into a shoot, brother. Every once in a while it's a work and it turns into a shoot. But, do you have any idea who you think it might be?
I'm pretty clueless, as to who it is myself. I mean, you probably have a better guess than I do. I mean, it's, you know, like names like Pariah and I mean, you know, Pariah would be kind of cool because he's definitely, you know, he's always been kind of connected to the Crisis. In fact, that's where he first appeared in the 1980s Crisis on Infinite Earths. So, I mean, I think he'd be a fitting character to kind of be Mr. Oz. So I guess that would be my if I had to have a pick, if we had like a betting pool or something, I would just, you know, put a few bucks on him.
I think it's fair. I think that you know, there, I don't know what would be a wrong answer of characters that we haven't seen yet or characters that it could possibly be.
Yeah, I don't think Jor-El. I think I agree with you. I think Jor-El would be just kind of like a just throwing that out there, you know, for let's just, you know, throw it out there.
I do too. Like, and I mean, the first time we ever saw Mr. Oz was back during Jeff Johns's Superman run with John Romita Jr. That was back during the New 52. And of course we go all the way into Rebirth with this guy, like not revealing who he is, but he seems to have like some personal connection to Clark Kent. And we've been fed little pieces of evidence all along. And I've been trying to put the puzzle together, but I'm like, I'm just not seeing the full picture. I feel like I'm still missing, you know, something important. And then of course he shows up in Detective Comics as well. He kidnapped Tim Drake and made everybody think he was dead. He also took Doomsday at the end of the first Action Comics arc. And he had imprisoned Mixius Pidalic for a little while until he got out. And that led to a kind of confusing story arc. I mean, if you were reading it, it all made sense, but it's one of those things that you had to read it in order for it to actually work. Just sitting here trying to explain it would take too long. But there's a mystery prisoner in Mr. Oz's cage as well that we still haven't seen yet, and I'm curious as to who that might be. All that's supposed to be revealed as well. There's some big revelations coming to Action Comics very, very soon. I think it actually starts this month too. So folks need to be on the lookout for that. Big mystery from Rebirth is going to finally be solved. And that's really the biggest stuff that I'm looking forward to. I mean, of course, all the stuff with Metal, very curious about that. And I'm wondering if we're ever going to find out, what's the deal with the three Jokers? Still waiting on some of that to be revealed too. But in any case, those are certainly the biggest ones that we've got coming up the rest of this year, stuff that's going to be getting our money. And we'd love to know what you guys are looking forward to most too. So you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Russell_Sellers. He is at HKP2814. Hit us up on Twitter. Come by the old Facebook page, which is the Facebook group, Place to Be Nation Comics. You can find this post there. You can also find it on placetobenation.com. If you've got a Discuss account, you can jump in on the conversation. Tell us what you're looking forward to. Who do you think Mr. Oz is? I'd love to hear people's cockamamie crackpot or maybe even genius ideas as to who Mr. Oz could be. Hit us up. We want to know. But beyond that, let's jump into a couple of other things. Like, kind of dead out there in the TV world right now, isn't it? At least as far as I can tell. And I did catch up on Preacher today. And, oh boy, I didn't think they could get away with some of this stuff on TV. But they're doing it, man. They have brought in some of the more sacrilegious and offensive stuff from the graphic novel right to the television screen. And how best to describe it? Well, I'll pop me some Preacher fans. Humperdoo. That's what you got to look out for. Kelly, you were a Preacher fan, weren't you? I think. I don't remember if you were or not. But I'm a Preacher fan. So, yeah, you're a Preacher fan, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. I haven't seen the second season. I'm planning on picking that up here. Maybe I'll watch some tomorrows since, I'm off on Mondays, so.
It's also Labor Day.
Yeah. And so it definitely, I mean, the series itself is great. If you haven't read it, I mean, it's in trade form now, of course, has been for some time. Definitely worth picking up.
Yep. I have been very excited and kind of shocked at times as to what they have allowed in this season.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a fairly graphic sex scene in one of the episodes that I wasn't expecting it. It just kind of happens because the episode opens with it. And you're like, wow, they got away with this on AMC.
Mm-hmm.
That is something. And there was a tease. I don't know how far they'll go with this, but there was a tease of Jesse's grandmother at the end of the most recent episode, or actually throughout this most recent episode, where he's having flashbacks to her. And I'm like, oh boy, if they go there, there's I hope some chickens are running for their lives right now.
Yeah,
because there's some horrible things that are going to happen. But like I said, I mean they've had to edit some stuff out though. They've gone very edgy with this season, and I have just been so pleased with how they've done it. It feels very much like the comic. So yeah, big pop there. Now before we get into any other discussion on the other show that I was going to mention, have you watched Defenders yet?
No, I have not. It's one of those ones that I was talking to another friend of mine yesterday who is a big fan of the Netflix series. And I told him, and I guess I'll say this here too, I think I'm getting to a point where I'm kind of getting superhero show kind of fatigue. So it's not where I'm going to completely stop watching the shows. No, but adding any new shows or watching anything new, I'm not as hyped as I used to be. You know, when they announced Defenders a couple of years ago, of course I was hyped. But now that it's been out, now that, you know, I'm like, you know what? I don't have to just see it right now. I can see it, you know, it'll be on for a bit. So I'm not in any big hurry to just get out and Mainly because I think the other thing too is I'm a little gun shy from the fact that I wanted to see Iron Fist, but I heard so much stuff about it. And I just was like, I don't know if I want to spend my time invested in this series that is kind of mediocre. And I know Defenders isn't, but I'm just kind of like, it's on my to watch list and I will watch it. I've heard good things about it. So, I mean, I'm not worried.
I'll add my positive review of Defenders in there. It was what I had hoped that it could be. For the most part, there's some stuff in there that still doesn't quite work. Most of it Iron Fist related. But I will say that the showrunners and the writers of Defenders did Danny Rand better than the folks running his own show did. Mm-hmm. So at least there's that. And there are no Meachums in Defenders, so already big thumbs up there. That works on multiple levels. No boardroom meetings either. Well, there's one boardroom meeting, and it turns into a fight, and a pretty awesome right. and a pretty awesome one at that. So this is what I wanted to see.
Do they call themselves the Defenders at any time? Is there this?
No, they never actually say the name.
Okay.
That is never a thing. They are very reluctant to even be a team. I mean, you don't even see these people in the same room together until like episode 3, I think. And it's mm-hmm. at the end of episode 3. It's like episode 4 is when the team has finally like really come together. I mean, each of the team members meet each other outside of the team
yeah.
to begin with. I mean, of course, Luke and Jessica already knew each other. But you have the first meeting of Matt Murdock and Jessica Jones, which is pretty cool. And I actually really like the first meeting of Luke Cage and Danny Rand. And I'll say this, those two actually do work pretty well together on screen. So if they go the heroes for hire route, I'm pretty confident that it's going to work out decently well.
And, yeah.
Of course, Rosario Dawson continues to be awesome in this show. She's kind of the linchpin, kind of the glue that brings it all together. So I'm a big fan of her. Like how they did her in Defenders. They made Misty Knight better than she was in the second half of Luke Cage.
Now is Rosario Dawson still going to be in Gifted, or am I thinking of some other show that she?
No, she dropped out of Gifted. She was replaced okay. by somebody else, and I think that okay. I'm not sure exactly what the reasoning was, but I know she did drop. And that's a show that I have become less interested in the more I hear about it. Mainly because they say that it's not connected to the Fox X-Men universe.
Again, that's just...
I'm like, why?
I'm like, well, why would you do that? Like, I mean,
you're making an X-Men show, you're calling it X-Men The Gifted, and you're not connecting it to the larger X-Men universe. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's Fox. I mean, come on. You've only got the one universe to play with.
You essentially have your own Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. vibe going. You could work that, but yeah. you're not going to work that at all. You're going to that's Fox for you. They're dumb.
I was like, in some cases, like, you know, with Warner Brothers, you know, they've got their TV shows and their movie universes as separate, but they got a huge ass universe to play with. The X-Men ain't that big.
Mm-mm.
So. This decision doesn't work for me. I like that, you know, you could have done it Legion style and just like tangentially said that it was related yet not.
Yeah.
And it would work because Legion works really well. Legion is a fantastic show. I can't wait for that to come back next year. I was a big fan of that first season. Thought it hit all the marks.
Yeah.
Good X-Men show, or well, a good mutant-based show. That's a hell of a head trip, too. If you haven't seen it, highly recommend Legion. Now, looking over at, but looking back at Defenders, I was a huge fan of the action that they put into this show. It reminded me why I like Daredevil and this take on Matt Murdock so much. I know not everybody likes her, but I think Karen Page is just fine. She's not terrible. And the only thing is, in Defender, she doesn't really have much to do. She's there a couple of times, mainly for the exposition and mainly to show us where Matt and Karen left off at the end of Daredevil Season 2. And she and Foggy are also in it to kind of lay a little bit of groundwork for what will be Daredevil Season 3, which I think they're very heavily leaning towards doing an adaptation of Reborn. If that is the case, Season 3 is going to be popping off pretty big. And of course, we get groundwork laid for each of the individual characters as to where they're going to go in their respective next seasons. Jessica Jones, I think, is probably going to be the most successful one out of all of them, because Jessica Jones is just their best show. And in Defenders, their best character. She is absolutely tremendous. Kristen Ritter is a hell of an actress, and she embodies the character of Jessica Jones perfectly. Can't praise her enough. And Mike Coulter continues to play Luke Cage wonderfully. So, 3.5 out of 4 on my scale for Defenders. So, yeah. strong series. Think it benefited very much from the 8 episodes rather than going for the full 13.
Yeah.
Keeping it condensed was a better idea. Made it more like an 8-hour movie. Loved seeing the culmination of everything that's been built to from Daredevil Season 1 to now. Good execution overall. A couple of weak points. Some stuff that I felt could have been done a little bit better. But overall, I was intrigued. I binged it, and I typically won't do that for many shows. But Defenders is binge worthy, so definitely check that out whenever you have the time. And if you want the Cliff Notes version of Iron Fist, hit me up off air, Kelly. Then I'll tell you all you need to know about that, so you can just skip the series and go right to Defenders.
All right.
That way you don't have to sit through it. Although some people will protest me doing that, because they'll be like, no, you must suffer like the rest of us have suffered. but you know what? I actually want you to watch Defenders. I don't want you to watch Iron Fist and be like, sorry, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I literally know the whole back thing. I mean, I've read read up on the series. So, I mean, I get the gist of it.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to watch it. And for those who are like, you know, shame on you. Look, you know what? I love watching bad cinema. I love watching bad movies. But it's hard to watch TV shows that are about superheroes, and you expect, especially when you watch so many really good series, you're expecting everything to kind of be like that. And when it's not, it's just kind of hard to make yourself want to sit there and watch it. And
it really is.
It's not easy. So let me pass on this, and I'll definitely watch the Defenders, and you know,
but you know what? I do have a list of like 3 episodes of Iron Fist that are worth watching, and I'll have to get that together, but I'll get that together for you, and I'll tell you which they are. And if any folks out there listening actually liked Iron Fist, if you were a fan of it, I'd love to hear why. I'd love to know what it is about the show that you really dug. And if you were not a fan of Iron Fist, not that I don't want to hear from you, but you'd pretty much just be preaching to the choir, and you're in the majority. So don't worry there. I would really love to know what it is about Iron Fist that some people do like, because I have seen some fans out there, some people who have defended Iron Fist. And I've been like, you know, I tried, and there were like 3 episodes that I liked. And most of that was Colleen Wing focused, because she was the real star of the show to me. And she probably should be in Iron Fist Season 2. And you know what? I'm going to say it right now, Kelly. I'm going to give Iron Fist Season 2 a chance.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm going to do it is because they're getting a new showrunner and new writers. And the choreography is supposed to be different, because as it turns out, Finn Jones was given the fight choreography for season one, like maybe a few hours before they actually shot it. That's how
wow.
That's how much time he had to work on it.
That's kind of lame.
That is terrible. They did him no favors.
Yeah.
By doing that. I'm like, and you can tell it's different on Defenders, because whenever he fights in Defenders, I'm like, oh my God, somebody taught Finn Jones how to fight between Iron Fist and now. Because he's pulling off some good looking moves. I'm like, I'm a believer now. I'm believing that he can pull off the Kung Fu. But as it turns out, he was given like days to practice the fight choreography before they would shoot it. I'm like,
that sounds like something was messed up somewhere, because people normally with shows like that, you have
days.
Weeks or yeah, days or weeks where you're given time to get the moves down, because you got to film it and you have to make it, you know, you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah. It's a choreographed dance.
Yeah.
What you're seeing in fight scenes is never like necessarily a fight training and they're improvising. No, this is all choreographed like a dance routine, and they just speed it up. And in order to get good at it, you have to practice it for hours and hours. And they need at least, you know, 4 or 5 days, I would think, to go over the routine and get it down that you can perform it well enough on camera. Not to mention being able to perform your actual lines believably. So it felt like the people running Iron Fist just didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't do their star any favors. But hopefully Iron Fist Season 2 will correct some of those problems. Defenders certainly did. Defenders actually made Danny Rand more tolerable, though I still really don't need him to tell me that he's the immortal Iron Fist ever again. I got it.
Yeah, we know.
Totally got it, man. I know that you're Danny Rand and that you're the immortal Iron Fist. That one's been hammered home enough. We got you. But speaking of really cool fight choreography and television shows, we're not long before Arrow is going to be coming back. And after the end of last season, oh boy, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I know that you're, were you talking about getting burned out? You're not burned out on RCW shows, are you?
No. I think what it is, it's adding any new shows to my plethora of shows I'm already watching. It's like a pull list. Okay. So like you have so many books on your pull list, and after a while, you know, you keep wanting to add more, but you're like, I can't, you know. It's either in this instance, it's, you know, it's always money, but it's really time. Do I want to allocate any more time to another show and be invested? And it's, you know, when I've got pretty much all of the DC shows, let's just say that's it. And then, you know, Punisher will be coming out soon.
Yep.
You know, Jessica Jones, you know, the all of these that I've watched before, it's just a lot. And, you know, by the time, you know, Luke Cage rolled around and I watched it, and I was just, there were some moments I was just like, oh, man, I don't want to do any more shows. You know, I'm just kind of,
I get where you come from. And it's the same with like comics. It's everything, because folks may not realize this, because all they ever hear from us is our comics and comic book TV shows, but we do other shit outside of that. And we have to have time for it. You know, you're running a D&D game, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got other activities that I'm doing. And
work,
you know, one of my good friends, Jim, and a lot of my friends from Colorado, they kind of dragged me back into playing World of Warcraft. And it's mainly,
I'm so sorry.
Well, you got to think about it like this. It's a social thing. I mean, we can get online, we can play together, we can joke around, we can play catch up. It to me, you know, if they're playing, I wouldn't be playing. At all. So it's more of, you know, I don't get to see these guys. I miss them. Can't really afford to go out there anytime soon. So this is the closest thing to, you know, sitting around the gaming table with them and gaming with them, you know, or whatever. So, you know, I want to spend at least a couple of nights hanging out with them during the week. So, you know, I do that. I play WoW a couple of nights a week. So, yeah, I mean, we've all got our other activities that we do, and it's just like putting another show on the list is time consuming in itself. And you know, like I said, we're going to come to that point where the superhero bubble is going to pop somewhere. And I think for me, it hasn't popped yet, but it's just like, it's almost there. I'm like, I'm like all these shows that are coming out, I want them to do well, but I'm like, how much more how long we've got before this is going to be like, okay, we've got so many shows out now and is viewership going to be able to handle them all? You know,
I think you're hitting on something there though, about it being like a pull list. Cause I mean, as comic fans, you know, there's always interesting stuff out there that looks cool that we never actually get around to reading. Mm-hmm. Because we just don't have the money or time to commit to it. And with comics, it really is about, it's about money more so than anything.
Oh yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it is also about time. Like, you can't discount that. With TV shows, I think it's just more pronounced because we don't think about the money we spend to see TV shows. They're just mm-hmm. they're just available.
Yeah.
But we have to commit like hours upon hours of time to.
Or if you like you did, you binged. You know, yeah, if you binge something, then you literally take an entire day of your day off and you spend doing that.
And that's. And I know how quickly my weekends seem to go by because on top of everything else, you know, I'm still going – I'm in the gym even on the weekend, and I'm also like doing the basic stuff around the house that I have to do to get ready for the work week. And
yep.
Those are my days off. And during the week, you know, 8 hours of work a day plus an hour in the gym at night, and you're – very quickly running out of time to do stuff. But I make time for my comics, you know, cause that's what I want to do. I want to read that and I want to try and spend as much time with friends as possible. So I get where you come from, you know, trying to find time for, any new shows is tough. And I think that, one thing I had to do is I dropped a couple of shows. Like, they're not comic book related shows, but there were a couple that I was watching before that I just said, you know what? These shows are not bad. They're just not like really hold my interest. And I don't understand why it is I'm committed to continuing on with them when these other shows are more interesting to me. And
right.
I feel like we got to do that same thing with our comics. Sometimes we've got to look at it and say, what's most interesting? What is really grabbing me? And mm-hmm. I mean, what am I going to spend my hard earned dollar on? And I mean, comics aren't exactly getting cheaper. That $3.99 price point is going to wind up being, I think, a baseline pretty soon.
Yeah.
I mean, it already is at Marvel and at DC. It's coming. As certain books shift over to being monthly from their twice monthly. And this is – it's kind of illusory, I guess, in the way that they present it, because all the $2.99 books at DC ship twice a month. So you're spending more on a $2.99 twice monthly than you would be on a $3.99 monthly.
Yeah.
And that's just a way for them to get more money, I guess. But you know, like Aquaman just switched to being monthly. Green Arrow is about to. And, mm-hmm. And I'm largely fine with that though, because people tend to want to buy my digital codes off of me. And I'm like, that's great. That brings my cost of comics down. And that's a way for people to make their comics buying experience a little cheaper. But still, yeah, we're running short of time to get everything in. So I'm kind of with you. That's why I'm not adding The Gifted. Like, I may never watch that show.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the fact is that it's good that Netflix and you know, exists to a certain point, because a lot of these shows will go to Netflix at some point in time and they'll stay on there for a bit. So it's not a complete wash. If you decide, oh, well, you know what? I've kind of got time now. Maybe I'll watch the first few episodes of Gifted on Netflix or, you know, Hulu or whatever. And yeah, I mean, you could do that if you wanted to, and I may, but But for the foreseeable future, I'm just going to kind of watch what I've been watching. And, you know, if I find the itch to pick up or to watch something else, I will. But, you know, like we were just saying, it, you know, comics and things. And I mean, that's our top passion. It's what we love to do. But there's other things we do, too. And it's, you know, you want to have a social life as well. And you want to visit and hang out with friends and family. So it's, you know, there's only 18 hours in a day, you know, counting the fact that you sleep part of it, but 18 workable hours, and that gets eaten up by a lot, you know?
Yeah, it's tough to get everything in. I mean, and there is a new comic book show coming that I'm pretty interested in, like Runaways is coming to Hulu.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very interested in that, but that may be one of those shows that I wait until the whole season is finished, and I wait for, like, a lull period somewhere where I'm like, all right, there's no shows on for me right now. And the summertime is great for that typically. Cause we get Game of Thrones during the summer, but, it's going to wind up being abbreviated.
Yeah. And I just finished that. The last episode just aired last Sunday. So, I mean, I finished watching that. So
yeah, you've got a brief period right now where there's not much, to keep up with. There's Preacher, and, next month, though, Walking Dead is going to be back.
Yeah.
And you know that's going to wind up taking up a lot of people's time. But October is also going to see the return of Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow. And, of course, we're going to be neck deep on that one. All in on all three. But
they say that this next Flash season is supposed to be a little bit more lighthearted. To some degree, which I'm looking forward to. I mean, last season was pretty dark, pretty rough, and I'm all for, you know.
I'm good with that. A return of happy Barry Allen is a good thing. Very much looking forward to that. I'm a little higher on season three than most, I think, but I'm right there with you guys when it comes to no more speeds or villains.
Yeah.
Let's move away from that, because Flash has a lot more to offer than just, than speedsters. There are other villains that he can have. And the Thinker is supposed to be the big bad of season four. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to Richard Dragon over on Arrow, though. You know, because Richard Dragon is supposed to be, like, the best hand-to-hand martial artist in the DC universe.
Right.
And he's going to be the big bad, or at least one of the major villains of this coming up season of Arrow. Oh, you have my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see that. And, of course, it looks like Legends of Tomorrow is steering even more into the weirdness skid that it started and that it really embraced in season two, which was a fantastic season all from beginning to end. I'm loving this idea that they're going to be so different from everything else that's airing. Because even though they're in that family of CW shows, they don't feel like a superhero show.
It feels like
something completely different. That time travel aspect is cool, but I'm digging that they're doing kind of this interdimensional thing too. Like, I mean, we don't know who may show up on this show.
Right. And the fact that I think they've already said a few things about, okay, we're going to see Isis show up.
That's a big one.
And that's a big one. And there were some other character I thought I heard they mentioned. Have you heard anything else other than Isis?
I'm trying to think of who else might be on this show, but I know who I'd like to see show up. I'd love to see Booster Gold.
Yeah.
I would absolutely love to see that. And for Ted Kord to show up proper, because I think Legends would be a good place for him.
Yeah.
And if I had it my way, I think John Constantine would actually fit in pretty well. If not for an entire season, but like for a little arc,
yeah,
like a two or three parter or something in there, Give me some Constantine and some Zatanna on Legends of Tomorrow. I think that that would be a good place for them to show up. And who doesn't want more Matt Ryan Constantine?
Yeah.
That guy is awesome.
So underrated as, you know, I was not so much a naysayer for the show. I think my view on Constantine was this show has come a little too late because we've already kind of been inundated with supernatural shows, with Supernatural being, you know, 10 seasons plus in. And the other aspect was you put it on NBC, you put it on the old folks network. Mm. So it just, you know,
it should have moved over to CW.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. I just feel bad because, you know, the first couple episodes I watched were entertaining. And I think, as I continue to watch the show, I enjoyed it more. But at the same time, I saw the writing on the wall. I said, this show's not going to get another season. Unfortunately, it's not going to get another season. And it's, you know.
And Matt Ryan's, though that season of Arrow that he appeared on was not a very good season of the show.
It was a highlight, I think, at least.
He was. You know, yeah. Matt Ryan was a big highlight for that season. He fit in well with that universe. I was like, man, we need more of this. I need more Constantine. And, you know, with any luck, we'll see Matt Ryan reprising the role again in live action. He's getting an animated show on CW, or CW Seed is getting a Constantine animated show with him voicing the character.
Yeah.
So that's something. And I'm like, okay, we just need a return. And, you know, we'll hopefully maybe one day. But on the other side of the CW spectrum, Supergirl is coming into her third season, and they've teased Rain as the big bad of season 3, who is another Kryptonian villain. And I got to tell you, this is the same problem that Flash was running into. You can't just keep doing the same type of villain every season. You're going to have to break out of this.
Yeah, you got a whole DCU universe to deal with, and there's more out there than just Kryptonians, you know.
Like, there's a lot they could play with Supergirl. I mean, Lena Luthor needs to keep being built up and give us that really great heel turn. Because she was such a good character in season 2. I absolutely loved her.
Yeah. Yeah. I did too.
She was done very, very well. The whole Cadmus arc actually was good stuff. Like, anytime that the focus was on Cadmus, the show was better.
Mm-hmm.
The only time it sucked was, during the Cadmus arc was whenever they did the whole cyborg Superman thing, which was pretty bad.
Gross. It was gross.
Yeah, it was.
I think the actor even said that, you know, he wasn't all that jazzed about the cyborg Superman character because there's literally all they did was slap a little mask on him, and that was it.
They did not do that character any favors. I would say let's abandon cyborg Superman as a character on Supergirl.
No one will blame you. No one will. Yeah.
That guy is so much better as John Jones, Martian Manhunter, anyway.
Don't waste him.
Just let him be that. We don't need cyborg Superman on the show because you know what? Cadmus has got other things. Cadmus could do they could do that whole Metallo thing again, which was really cool, having like multiple guys being Metallo.
Yeah.
That was a cool arc. I'd like to see the return of Superman. I thought that Tyler Hoechlin, or however you say his last name, I thought that he was really good.
That guy was spot on. I mean, he looked, he played the character well. I mean, you believe not only was his Superman good, his Clark Kent was on par too. You know,
I felt like he needed a little bit more time to grow into the role, but he was getting there. Like, it was very, very good start for this version of Superman, and I would love to see more of him. Of course, one idea that's been thrown out there before on other podcasts and by other people here at Place to Be Nation, but I am totally on board with the idea of Kate Kane appearing on Supergirl.
Yeah.
Bringing in the Batwoman. Yeah. That, because, I mean, where else is she going to be?
Please don't put her on Gotham.
No, for God's sake. No, don't even tempt them. Like, don't do it. Don't ruin one of my favorite characters that way. Like, bring her over to Supergirl, because I felt like if a member of the Bat family is going to appear on Supergirl, it should be Batwoman.
Yeah.
It should absolutely be Kate Kane. And I think there's a whole lot of good storytelling that could be done with those two characters. Like, if you have Supergirl and Batwoman meeting for the first time, I think that'd be awesome. I would pop big for that one. Now, we've also got another new superhero show coming, Kelly. Black Lightning is coming this fall.
I am going to watch that. I am excited for that.
As am I.
You know,
I thought that trailer looked good. Sorry.
I did too. And I'm, you know, that is one show that I will definitely check out. It's not like it. Black Lightning is another one of those 70s characters that I grew up, and he would pop into different, you know, he had his own little series for a little while, but mainly he popped into other people's series, and I just always thought he was cool, you know? So I'm happy to see him show up. I'm kind of worried though. Like I said, we're kind of hitting that saturating point with shows, superhero themed. So
yeah, CW has probably reached its bursting point now.
Yeah.
I mean, this will be 5 shows.
And, you know, they've got to be going, you know, we can't keep doing this. You know, it's.
Unless they're going to just be the DC television network. And,
right.
And I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, DC is about to launch its own streaming service too. And we have, we've seen casting announcements for Raven, for Starfire, and for Nightwing, and I got to tell you, I'm pretty happy with the casting I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean the Titan series is another one that I will probably check out. You know, just because it's again, I'm a big fan of the Titans, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing them on the small screen.
Yeah,
so.
I'm popping big for this one because it's another show that's developed by Geoff Johns, and Berlanti. It's some of the producers from the CWDC shows with Geoff Johns coming in, because he hasn't developed one of these shows in a hands-on way since The Flash. So I'm pretty excited about what Titans is going to be. I hope it turns out awesome. Certainly going to be subscribing to the DC network whenever that starts. Very much looking forward to that, and to Young Justice season 3 coming up on that network as well, but that won't be until next year, and we don't know when next year. but if I had to guess, it'll probably be like sometime in the fall of 2018. But this year, we've got a couple of movies left coming out this year. One coming out in a couple of weeks, Kingsman: The Golden Circle.
Looks good.
Yeah, it does. I like that they've kept the trailers kind of sparse as far as like what the story is. It all seems very straightforward. They're very much highlighting the action and the some of the wit of the movie, and it feels like a return to how the first one was. So if that's the case, totally in. Very much looking forward to that one. And then of course at the in November we got the two. Big King Daddies of Marvel and DC are breaking out their final movies of the year, with Thor coming up first, Thor Ragnarok, and then, of course, Justice League. Of those two, I still think that Thor Ragnarok is popping me harder, though I'm a little concerned about the 90-minute runtime for the amount of story that they're talking about telling. That seems a little short.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's probably longer than 90 minutes. I'm sure that it's closer to 2 hours, but still, your story should be way longer than that, since it's Ragnarok is a huge story. Plus, you're incorporating elements of Planet Hulk into the story. So I don't know how you do this in such a small amount of space, though. I got to say, all the trailers have been great. I haven't seen a bad trailer for this movie yet. And Kate Blanchett as Hela, and of course Jeff Goldblum kind of steal the trailer for me.
Yeah,
I'm very much looking forward to those two. They're gonna pop me big, I think. So, but what did you, Kelly? I don't think I got your opinion on this. What do you think of the new Comic-Con Justice League trailer? And how much did you orgasm whenever he said no lanterns?
Well, I mean, when they said that, I was like, okay, well, there's confirmation that, you know, the lanterns are here, and, you know, but there's just none on Earth right now. So, I mean, that
none that we've seen, but I'm of the belief that if you say something like that and it winds up in the movie, you can't just say that and not show us something.
You know, I can't. The whole thing was just really good. I mean, the whole trailer was good. And I was talking to my friend Danny yesterday, and I think we're both kind of in agreement. I think Jason Momoa, I think Aquaman's going to be the standout in the movie. I think he's going to kind of steal, you know, kind of the way Wonder Woman kind of stole the show in Superman, Batman. I kind of got a feeling Aquaman may kind of do the same kind of, just from the scenes I've seen and just some of the things he said. You know, if you can't walk out of this film not impressed by Aquaman, then you have a dead soul.
Yeah,
because I think Jason Momoa he's got the energy. I've watched a lot of videos. He just seems really enthusiastic about what he's doing, and that's what I love about folks that get involved in these films.
He's the rock star of Justice League by far. I think that Aquaman is going to steal this movie. I think it's going to be between Jason Momoa and Jeremy Irons. I think that they are going to be the big standouts of this movie, and of course Gal Gadot. She's going to continue to just rock it as Wonder Woman.
I can't get tired of her little drop, because I think that's her signature move. You know, I know you're into wrestling. I think this is her signature move, is where she drops to the ground and spins and kicks people.
Yes.
She did that out of the gate. I was like, that's her move. That's her go-to move to just mess people up.
That's her finisher.
That's her finisher.
That's what we look for. That's the move we expect. And you know what? She does it gracefully, beautifully, and devastatingly. So that's we got to see it every time. I'm looking forward to Justice League. There are things about it that definitely feel a little concerning.
Yeah.
And of course the behind the scenes stuff that everybody knows about, Ben Affleck's future as Batman, certainly concerning. And I honestly think that some mountains are being made of molehills as far as that is concerned. Some people who just really want a story, and they were trying to strike while a certain iron was hot. If he's in Matt Reeves' Batman movie, awesome. Would love to see it. If he's not in Matt Reeves' Batman movie, I'm still good with it. I'm at the point now where I'm like, if people want to make up all the drama for the behind-the-scenes stuff, go ahead. I'm too emotionally exhausted to continue following it that closely. So, I mean, I'm still going to follow it. I'm still going to be aware of it, but my ability to be like upset by any of it is pretty much gone. So if people want to say that it's going to be terrible and get all down in the dumps about it, I'm like, well, kid, you're just going to have to go and be miserable all on your own, because I'm just going to sit back over here and wait for a trailer.
Yeah.
And so far, the Justice League trailers look promising. There's good stuff in there. I like what I'm seeing from pretty much all the characters, with a little exception there on the Flash end. I think Flash is really the only character that hasn't fully hit with me yet. And yeah, some of the CGI for Cyborg didn't work in that first trailer. Seemed a little too stiff, but I felt like they cleaned up a good bit of it for the new Comic-Con trailer. Felt like it looked better.
Yeah.
And of course, we haven't seen any of the Superman stuff yet, and they shouldn't. I'm of the belief that Superman scenes should be completely saved for the actual movie. Do not show him in the trailers. Like, hint at his existence. Like, talk about Superman, but don't show him.
Right.
Like, save that reveal, the return, the big return of Superman should be like this huge, like, fan service moment on screen that should not be given away in a trailer.
No, that's completely – people expect it. People, you know, are expecting this to happen, and you really don't need to give it to them. You need to just
wait,
surprise
for it.
Them. Yeah.
Like, I mean, everybody already knows Superman's coming back. Yes, we got it. But since you already know that, we don't have to reveal it in a trailer. We can wait till that moment it happens in the movie. And that's where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to be there. I'm looking forward to seeing what they offer up. And I hope that it turns out good. I don't expect it to be as good as Wonder Woman was. But I do suspect that it will be a better movie than what Batman v Superman was.
Yeah.
I feel like people are going to like it more than they like that movie. And I think they'll like it more than they like Suicide Squad. So I feel like Justice League can be a moral victory for the DC Extended Universe if it can land in the, like just above Man of Steel territory.
Right.
Like, Man of Steel, I think, is the baseline of acceptable movie for the DCEU. And everything else from now on should be better than that. And Wonder Woman represents, like, the ultra highs that the DCEU could possibly reach. And I think that if any movie in the upcoming DCEU stands a chance of equaling that success and that fun of Wonder Woman, I think Aquaman is going to be it. I feel like everything we've seen from the solo movie, all the stuff I've seen from the set of Aquaman is looking spot on. It's looking like that James Wan is nailing this as a director. And, of course, Jason Momoa and Amber Heard absolutely encapsulate their characters. And we'll be seeing more of them in Justice League as well. So lots of stuff to look forward to at the end of this year. 2017 has been a hell of a year for comics and comic book media. Kelly, it's been fun just talking a little shop.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely been great. I've missed it.
Yeah, we haven't done just a straight up like talking shop episode in, God, a little while. Certainly not one that hasn't gone for like 4 hours, but I felt like we've kept a pretty good time on this one.
Yeah, we have. We have.
And hopefully you guys have enjoyed listening to us go on and on about all the things that we've enjoyed this year so far in comics. And hopefully we've inspired you to go and get you some of these books that we've mentioned and to check out some of the shows. And of course, as we've said before, we want to hear your thoughts on all of this. So hit us up. Let us know what it is that you've been enjoying. Tell us what you're looking forward to in this fall, TV shows, movies, new shows, new seasons, all of it. We want to hear from you guys. We gave you the Twitter handles earlier. And, of course, you can always find us on placetobenation.com and the Place to Be Nation comics group on Facebook. Join the group. Join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, we are going to bring this episode to a close. Now, when we come back for our next episode in September, hopefully we'll get to that in a more timely manner than we got to this one. We're going to switch back to a format that you guys are more familiar with. We're going to get into our Guide to episode. We haven't done one of those, and we're going to do a little guide to Vertigo Comics. And we're going to try and get a guest on for that one. And I think I know someone right here at Place to Be Nation who is a big Vertigo guy. So we're going to go and talk to him and see if we can't get him on the show. And we're going to talk some Vertigo comics. But with that, it was a good time.
Definitely, definitely.
And folks, for Kelly Pool, I'm Russell Sellers. We will see you guys next time.
Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. Monday night is my night to cook. Tuesday night we go and visit your mother, but Wednesday we make sweet weekly love. It's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your after work social sports team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, it's all on. You lean in and whisper something sexy in my ear like,
I might go to bed now, I've got work in the morning.
I know what you're trying to say, girl. You're trying to say, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business time.
Oh, 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 yeah.
Then went in the bathroom, brushing our teeth. That's all part of the foreplay. I love foreplay. And you sort out the recycling. That isn't part of the foreplay process, but it is still very important. Next thing you know, we're in the bedroom. You're wearing that baggy old ugly t-shirt you got from your work several years ago. You know the one, baby, with the color stain. I remove my clothes very, very clumsily, tripping sensuously over my pants. Now I'm naked, except for my socks, and you know when I'm down to just my socks, what time it is. When it's with me, girl, you only need 2 minutes, because I'm so intense. You whisper something sexy like,
is that it?
I know what you're trying to say, girl. You're trying to say, oh yeah, that's it. And you tell me you want some more. Well, I'm not surprised, but I'm quite sleepy.